Hello and welcome to the UK Gamers Podcast. I hope you had a great Christmas and New Year. And here we are in 2012, the year of the apocalypse, if you wish to believe some people. And it looked like they might have been right. News broke that there was a big fire going on and it looked like it was woodland scenics. And at first it looked like the whole place had burned down and it was a disaster. Subsequent reports seem to have clarified that it was just, you know, one or two of the buildings that had a problem, but they seem to be okay. Obviously, this might have some effect, I guess, on their production schedule, but they seem fairly optimistic that it's situation normal. So that's good news. Talking about other apocalyptic things, obviously with the new year, there's now the Star Wars MMO, which is going to absorb hundreds of hours of people's time. I'm a bit ambivalent towards MMOs. They're quite fun to dabble in, but not really my thing. But if you're a big fan of MMOs and a bigger fan of Star Wars, then you're definitely going to want to check it out. It seems to be really good from the reports I'm receiving. Now, talking about computer games, the Confrontation game has been announced and trailered finally. The animation's not bad, it's not brilliant. It'll be interesting to see what the game is and what improvements they can make to the graphics before I make a final verdict on it. And the same company is also going to be bringing you a Game of Thrones RPG, so be interesting to see what goes on there. Now, talking about Confrontation, obviously Legacy Miniatures continue to release lots of gorgeous figures. Unfortunately for us over here in the UK, the very high price to buy, plus the high price of shipping, plus the inevitable import duties means they have become reassuringly expensive. And I'm wondering if you might actually be better off just buying original metal figures off eBay at times. I really hope Legacy do really well. And I hope they can expand the range. Now, there was an announcement because obviously lots of people have been grumbling about things. I think one thing they could do to really help matters would be to actually have a UK or European distribution system. And I'd also like to see the prices drop a bit. Now, unfortunately, the one figure they didn't get hold of was a kind of an Orc Titan, which is a kind of great big kind of Behemothic thing with a load of Behemoth orcs on top, and I was very sad to hear this. Thankfully someone did pick it up and it was Taban Miniatures. Unfortunately, a bit like Legacy, they also have put a very high price tag on it. I think it's about £150. I think it's €151 to be precise. It's a lovely figure, but very hard to justify because, you know, the euro to the pound ratio is not very good at the moment. And, you know, I struggle to justify spending £30 on a miniature, let alone over £100. So best of luck to them as well. I believe it's going to be a limited run of 300 or so miniatures, and that's it, apparently, which makes me a bit of a sad panda. In other apocalyptic news, D&D is getting a refresh. There's like a worldwide public beta or something being announced. I haven't been able to check out all the details because it literally came out in the last few days, the announcement. And D&D 5th edition looks like it's in the works, which might come as a shock to some people. I think 4th edition was a great idea, a great game, didn't quite work for me, and I think a few other people also agreed on that. I'm hoping for a return more to the free-form, kind of fairly easy to get hold of 1st edition sort of rule mentality. Somehow I don't see them going for that. I think there were lots of really good things in 4th edition though, so I hope they don't throw the baby out with the bathwater there. And I can't remember if I mentioned it, so I'll mention this again. In November, a new audio CD from The Scarifiers came out. If you're into kind of your Call of Cthulhu, Sherlock Holmesy type stuff, you might enjoy this slightly interesting series called The Scarifiers. And, of course, this one was quite a sad one because one of the main actors died, and this was the first one, really, without him being involved. Anyway, I think that pretty much covers it for news. I was very pleased to get hold of both copies of Dwarf King's Hold last year. I believe there's an expansion coming out sometime this month, which looks very interesting. Going to have to try and reserve some money for that. But I was also very pleased to get the current hotness at Board Game Geek, Eclipse. Managed to get my pre-order in. That's arrived. I've punched it all out. And I now need to read the rules because I'm desperate to play it. And unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to get time to kind of read the rules and get my head around them for this weekend because I'm going to be going off and playing a load of board games on Saturday. And so I'm also going to be playing what I'm going to be talking about after the break.
Last minute bit of information.
GW did their normal sort of leakage of new releases. And I believe yesterday or today, they finally allowed you to start pre-ordering and seeing the Vampire Count stuff. I've decided with my GW coverage to more or less ignore them, because I've noticed starting to get a bit of a negative Nancy towards them, and that's not really fair, and who wants to be moping and groping about things? Anyway, as I say, I think that pretty much covers it for everything. The only final bit of news is that my game, Moth Eating Cats Destroyed My Broadband, is finally available on the GameCrafter, and I recommend you go check it out. If you like cats and stupid games like Flux, you'll probably enjoy it. If you like Demacher, your enjoyment might be a bit less. It's a free-form, fun-loving bit of stupidity, really. At the moment, it's a deluxe edition, so it is a bit pricey. Comes with all sorts of little widgety bits inside the box. I'm going to be looking at ways of helping reduce the cost, because obviously money is tight for everyone. Anyway, take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to be talking about War Machine and Hordes from Privateer Press.
Quick, shut that door, man.
As if that's going to stop it.
Look, it's not my fault the Elder Sign didn't work.
That's because it's shaped like a star.
No, it's shaped like a tree.
Star!
Tree!
Star! Well, it's too late now. We're the last ones.
What about Lady Hetherington?
She set on fire, then exploded.
And Father O'Leary?
He plucked out his own eyeballs and ate them.
Damn! I wish I'd visited Yogg-Sothoth.com more often.
Yogg-Sothoth.com?
Yes, you know, that Call of Cthulhu website. Jolly useful. It's got forums, news, even interviews with the great, and the undead.
Oh, I do wish you hadn't said that.
Oh, my lord! Stay away from me, you horror! No!
Well, you'll not take me! What? No! Please, no!
The Yogg Radio. A Cthulhu podcast from YoggSothoth.com.
Hello and welcome back. Right, well, Privateer Press produced lots of really great games, including Monsterpocalypse, but they're probably more known for War Machine and Hordes, which is currently in its Mark II variant. Now, Mark I came out, and I don't really know too much about Mark I. Basically, you had Mark I, then a load of expansion books, and Mark I Remix, and then the big public beta, which resulted in us getting Mark II, which is where my involvement came on. Now, the reason I didn't get involved with Mark I was I quite like the look of it. I'm really into my skirmish games, you know, a big fan of Infinity, which has had lots of really great releases. I like the confrontation stuff, Alchemy, Anima Tactics, Helldrider. I like all those sort of games. But the problem is there's only so many you could afford. And at the time, some of the early sculpts I wasn't that impressed with. They only did metal, which for a lot of people is what appeals about it, but for me metal is just a menace to work with pinning and green stuff and super glue, and you know, if you want to cut things and bend things, oh, it's just a pain in the wotsit to work with. Obviously, you know, some stuff is better than others. I have to say, now that I've actually started to buy stuff, it's not quite as bad when you've got it in your hand as when you're looking at it in the shop. But some of the sculpts I still think are a little bit subpar. However, others are absolutely awesome. I'm very impressed by their plastics. I know a lot of people are griped about them. One of the problems with the plastics is the mould lines and the mould kind of pore points aren't always in the best places. However, they clean up fairly easy. They're nice and easy to work with. I often find you can just click them together without even needing glue. But obviously a little bit of glue is required, and make sure you're using super glue. I use a kind of jelly super glue, and I've had no real problems with it. In fact, I actually had to take one apart the other day, and it glued so well I almost couldn't do it. I did manage it after much cursing and swearing. So anyway, I bought in really about when Mark II and the plastics came on board. I've had a few games, and my knowledge is fairly limited. I very bravely volunteered myself to go off to a tournament, so I'm either going to get absolutely owned by all the vets, or I'm going to be surprising them by doing some moves that normal people wouldn't do, and people underestimating my skills. So who knows, I might be crying into my microphone next time I talk to you. Now, what I really like about War Machine, I think it's got that mix of simple and complexity right. They're actually fairly simple rules. It's mostly based around 2d6 plus a stat versus another stat. There's a couple of options to boost your rolls by adding an extra d6, and I think the most you're likely to roll is 4d6. There might be the odd thing out there I don't know about that allows you to roll more, but typically you're never going to roll more than 4d6 plus a stat and compare it versus another stat. Now, let's take one character who might have a melee attack of 6. So 6 plus 2d6, let's call it 7, means on average you're going to be hitting someone with a defense of 13. Now, once you hit them, you then damage them. So you then combine typically the strength of and power of your weapon, which let's say is 12. Then you roll your 7 on your 2d6, so you're going to be doing 19 points of damage. Now, if they've got an armor 12, you're actually going to do them 7 points of damage. If they've got armor 21, you've not even broken through their armor, and they have no damage. So that's basically what the game is. Now, where it's complex is obviously some special rules, whether you boost attacks, whether you boost either the actual hit or the damage, some extra things like, you know, sometimes you can hit someone but you can't damage them, but you have a special effect that like sets them on fire or puts a load of acid all over them that slowly corrodes and corrupts them. So there's all sorts of little widgety bits that start adding to the complexity. But the main complexity seems to be on picking your forces and on positioning them on the table and meeting scenario objectives. So I'm very impressed by the mix of simplicity to complexity. And the more I get into the game, the more complex it is. Because, as I say, the actual basic rules are simple, but as you start adding units and interactions they have between each other, the complexity really builds up and you can have a really deep and meaningful game. And it can be quite vicious. Now, there is War Machine and there is Hordes, and they are currently two totally separate games. However, basically 99% of the rules are the same. The big difference is in War Machine you have Warcasters with Focus, and in Hordes you have Warlocks with Fury. Now, there are pros and cons, and in many ways the Fury is seen as being a bit stronger, but it's not actually quite as simple as that. I mean, a Warcaster is guaranteed to get their focus every turn. They can sit on their focus to make their armor tougher, and they can do things like cast spells, boost their armor, give their focus to other units to make them run or boost their chances of hitting or damaging. So it's quite a nice little mechanic, whereas Fury is slightly different. With Fury, you intrinsically as a warlock don't have Fury. Instead, your beasts that you control do. And as you provoke them into doing stuff they don't want to do, that generates Fury. And then in your turn, you can kind of leech that Fury off them and take it onto yourself, and then you can use it to cast spells and do fancy things. But from what I can see, Fury doesn't give you a boost to your armour, and if all your beasts get killed, your warlock now pretty much does nothing. Whereas with a warcaster, if all your warjacks, which are the things you tend to give focus to, if they go, it doesn't make your warcaster weaker by themselves. I mean, obviously it makes their force weaker, but it doesn't actually make them in and of themselves weaker. They can still cast their spells, they can still buy extra attacks, they can still boost their armor. So it's a subtle little difference. One of the reasons the Fury mechanic is seen as being quite nasty, for example, some nasty creatures might have 3 attacks straight off the bat, and they might have a Fury stat of 5, which means they can buy 5 extra attacks, so they can do 8 attacks on you in one turn. Whereas a warjack, which uses focus, you can only give it 3 focus. So if they've only got 2 initial attacks, you can only ever give them 5 focus at most. So it's an interesting debate that keeps going on between people as to which is better. I think some people would argue that Fury is a better kind of stat and ability, but War Machine has the better overall game system and mix of units and stuff. It is an argument that probably will never end, and I'm too early in my development with both games to be able to call it one way or the other. I do currently own more of the Horde stuff, but that's because that's what I bought first, because I really fell in love with the Trollbloods. Now, what are the Trollbloods? Well, they're one of the factions in the game. Now, there are several factions. In Hordes, you've got Trollbloods, Scorn, who are a bunch of kind of desert raiders, Circle of Oberus, which is a kind of load of druid werewolf-y type guys, and Legion of Everblight, which is a load of dragon-possessed elves and ogres and things, and then Minions, which are kind of your almost like freelancers, but they can also be a faction in and of their own right, and that includes kind of giant pig men called Pharaohs and Gator men, who are quite hard and nasty and dangerous. So interesting mix there. You're bound to find something you like. In War Machine, you've got Crix, who are a load of kind of undead people serving a big evil dragon, kind of like the father of dragons, Turuk, I think it's called. And you've then got your kind of holy religious zealots who like burning everything. They're Menoth. You've then got your boys in blue, who are sort of in some ways viewed as the goodies, but aren't, well, partly because they let down the trolls, so we can't forgive them for that. So Signa, your boys in blue, and then you've got your kind of Russian-y, in the snowy wastes, Kador, and they seem to specialise in big heavy jacks and not much else, and their infantry's replaced the kind of light jacks from other factions. And each faction has its pros and cons. For example, trolls tend to be slow, tough, and have all sorts of little tricks, whereas Legion of Everblight are fast and sneaky and nasty. In War Machine, for example, Crix are very devious and have all sorts of obscene little tricks, even including things like bringing things back from the dead. And then you've got like Menoth, who seem to specialise in lots of units that make each other better. So on paper they're not very good, but as a complete force they're quite nasty, and of course they love setting things on fire. So each faction, as I say, has its own little strengths and weaknesses. In addition, within each faction you have different war castles and warlocks that you can pick from, and they often come in a normal version and an epic version. The normal version is the original war caster as per the original rule set. The epic version is a version that's been changed by storyline events or you know, battle or whatever. Basically, they're exactly the same character, but they have slightly different mechanics, which may or may not be better for you. Don't assume just because it's an epic version of a warcaster or warlock that it is better. In some lists it will be better, in others it won't. Now, why am I talking about lists? Well, lists are what you need to play a game. Basically, all lists have a warcaster or warlock. You then have either a warjack or a beast, depending on whether you're playing War Machine or Hordes. You then can have a mix of units, which are kind of groups of typically 3, 6, or 10 men. And then you have your solos, which are specialist characters who stand by themselves. Now, when you build all those, you have a point total that you're trying to build towards. And typical sizes might be battle box size, which seems to average kind of in down near the 10 to 15 point range. Then the first official sort of army size, which is 15 points, 25 points, 35 points, and 50 points. And then really big battles are 100 points or more. Now, most tournaments seem to be 35 and 50 points. 35 seems to be quite popular because at 50, you can pretty much fit everything you want into your list. At 35, you can fit most of what you want in, but you're probably going to have to sacrifice some of your options to get everything in. Now, those point totals are very low because most unit costs are quite low and most warjacks are fairly cheapish as well. However, a heavy warjack might cost you 8 or 9 points, whereas a full-size 10-man unit might only cost you 4 points. So you might think you're better off taking lots of units, and often that is the case, and did give rise to this term called infantry machine. However, a warjack or a war beast is, even though it's a single figure, quite a powerful thing and quite hard to take down. Now, a lot of units might only have 1 hit point per individual, so you can take 10 hits and your unit's wiped out. Well, a lot of warjacks and warbeasts have like 18 or more points, so even though it's a single figure, it can absorb just as much damage, if not more, than a whole unit of men. So this is one of the things, depending on your list and the controller you've got, the warcaster or the warlock, some lists are better off being composed of units, others are better off being composed of lots of warjacks. And there is a bit of a call for more warjack love, and Mark II has gone towards helping that, because when you're building your list, your Warcaster and your Warlock actually give you 3 points which you can spend on your list, but only on Warjacks and Beasts. And that has helped guarantee that, you know, people often will field at least one, possibly two or even three Beasties. They come in heavy and light versions, and obviously the heavy versions are what you typically want, but, you know, they tend to be slower, easier to hit, but are real, you know, melee beat sticks, and some of them even have ranged options. Now, when you build your list, it reminds me in some ways a bit like magic. You've got to build a force that is able to be internally consistent with itself and support itself, but also deal with the various threats you're going to face. Now, if you know in your local area that everyone plays Scorn, then you might build your Troll Blood list to be designed to be a Troll Blood list that can cope with Scorn. However, if you go to a tournament where you might have people from all over the country, you might be playing Hordes armies, but you also might be playing War Machine armies, because Trolls, although they're Hordes, they are still in a game system that's compatible with War Machine stuff. So you might have to think, well, actually, the two armies I'm likely to come across are Scorn and Krik, so I need to build my list to deal with both. But there are a few players playing Kador, so you sometimes then have to start building a list so it's not brilliant against any one list, but can cope with all comers and be a bit of an all-rounder list. So that's kind of gets into this meta thing that you might hear talked about. And I think that's something that, obviously, the more tournaments you do, the better idea you get of ideas. But, of course, one of the problems with building for your meta is you can get into this sort of net decking thing that you had in Magic, where you basically go online, see a list, copy that list, go out and play it, and it just gets crushed. And you think, why is this getting crushed? This, you know, came first in the UK Nationals 2 months ago. Well, you've got to bear in mind your play style and your skill with the game will determine how successful a list is, not per se just the list. And that's one thing I do like about War Machine. You need to have a good list, but you also need to have good skill as well. So in theory, a guy with a great list and no skill probably will struggle against a guy with great skill and not a great list. And that's the other thing I like. Almost everything in the game is usable. Yes, there are some options that you tend to go for before others, but there is nothing in the rules really that you can say is absolutely garbage and you shouldn't ever put on the table. And of course, as they bring out new attachments for units and solos to boost various bits, some stuff that's not quite optimal right now suddenly gets a little bit of a leg up, and hopefully the game will start to become quite balanced. And that is one thing that is quite good. The game is pretty balanced. So lots and lots of praise there for that. Now, tourneys obviously do involve you having a 35-point list, which can involve you having quite a lot of figures. Now, as a game, it's very cheap to get into. For kind of 28 to 35 sort of pounds, you can buy a battle box, which is a great way to get a fairly good idea of what the faction can and can't do. There are arguments sometimes that battle boxes aren't the best way to get into the game, but if you don't really know what you're doing, it's a great way to buy in. You get, you know, typically two lights and a heavy and a caster. Depending on the faction, you might get a slightly different mix to that. For example, Kador gets two heavies, whereas Krix gets three lights. But it's, you know, great way to get into the game. But if you really know what you're doing, you might be able to buy slightly better options, but it will cost you a little bit more. And this is one thing where the game starts getting expensive. Now, compared to some other games, it's still relatively cheap for a complete force. For example, I did a little bit of net decking myself. I went online and saw a list of a very strong Circle of Orberus faction build, and it was a 35-point tournament list that did quite well at some tournaments. And I priced it up. It was about £130, which is, you know, a significant outlay of cash, but, you know, in the grand scheme of wargaming, it's not that big a deal for a really good, usable force. Now, obviously, if you want to buy everything from everything, it will get quite expensive. For example, there's about four factions I'd really like to own quite a lot of, and I already own a fair bit, and I started adding all the bits that I kind of definitely would want, and I got up to quite a large sum quite quickly. So, yes, it can be expensive. In particular, the single figures I think are quite expensive. Again, compared to some firms, the prices aren't too bad, but a single figure, You can get some less than £6, but typically you're looking at about £6 upwards. And some of them can be quite expensive because they're really big metal things, unless, of course, you're buying one of the plastic bits. One of the best deals is the 3-in-1 heavy kits they're doing at the moment. And Hordes has just had a load released, and the War Machine ones have been out for a while. But these are great. You get three figures in one box. Strictly speaking, that's not actually true. You get one figure with three options. Now, if you're a bit clever with magnetization, you can actually buy one figure and just click on, using your magnets, the various options, and you've now got three jacks for the price of one, and they're about £18. I think it's going to be a little bit trickier to do that with the Horde stuff, but not impossible. So that's a great way of saving yourself a little bit of money. Just buy maybe two heavies, and you can now build three different heavies per option, and allow you to field, you know, six variants in total. Now, a six-man unit seems to come in around the £25-ish region, maybe a little bit more. So, no, that's not a bad little deal. I really quite like some of the plastic options. As I say, there have been grumblings about them, but the great thing about the plastic options, you get a full-size unit, and these are typically for medium base units, which come as five men units, because in War Machine there's three base sizes, small, medium and large, and there is now an extra large base for these battle engines that have just come out, which are really, really big bases. But overall, simple game to pick up, hard to play, lots of variety, lots of different game styles for you to try out. There's bound to be some figures you detest, bound to be some figures you absolutely adore, but on the whole, you know, across the range, pretty much every range has several figures I really quite like, and every range has one or two I don't. But, you know, Trollbloods, I struggle to dislike most of the range. There are options which are kind of bottom of my list, but I'd be happy with any of them, and that's why I bought into that faction first. Similarly with Menoth, most of the figures in the Menoth range I like. There are a couple I'm waiting for plastic updates for, and I'm hoping that they're coming fairly soon. Now, if you like the sound of the game, then I would suggest you strongly look at the two-player box set for War Machine. This comes with Menoth and Kador. You get basically two heavies, a Warcaster, and a five-man unit of medium base infantry for Kador. And you get two heavies, a light, a Warcaster, and five medium-based heavy infantry for Menoth. You also get a nice little mini rule book, which is great for taking to the game table, a little miniature no-quarters magazine, and a couple of little bits extra, like dice and cheap nasty tape measure, and a little quick reference sheet. Really good deal. Not necessarily the most optimal selections from the factions, but it keeps the rules fairly simple and gives you a nice spread of forces, and gives you, you know, a good idea of the various interactions that go on in the game. So, really good, can't recommend it enough. As I say, I'm going to a tournament, which is a 35-point steamroller event. Now, at one of these, you obviously need a 35-point list to start with. Rather worryingly, you need a second 35-point list. Now, obviously, the way I've done this is I've got two Warcasters, or, strictly speaking, they're Warlocks, and basically, most of the actual rest of the list is the same in both lists. I do have a special character in one of the lists, and I believe the most recent Steamroller rules has some limitation on that, so I've removed that person from my second list and added a couple of extra bits because I've now got a load of spare points. So anyway, very quick look at Privateer Press War Machine and Hordes. If you want to find out more, go to the Privateer Press website, go check them out, they're really good. There's also a very un-PG rated podcast, Boosted Damage, which has some really great comments, but a lot of bad language for the youngsters out there. You might not want to go check that out. But really good. And the great thing about Privateer Press's website, there's a very good forum. And in addition, there are some quick start rules which you can download. There's quick start rules both for War Machine and Hordes. And they also include the unit cards that come in the starter box. So if you've got some proxy figures, you can just, you know, give it a go, see if it's your thing. And if it is, go out and buy stuff. When you're buying stuff, obviously, there's the rule book, which you should buy. And then there's faction books, which, whilst you should buy, you don't need to buy them. The great thing about the faction books, you get lots of lovely artwork, you get some fluff, so you can read up about the faction, you get pretty much all the units that exist for that faction, and you get some painting guides and info as well. So it's a really good idea to get those. It's not really necessary, though, because all the information you need actually comes on a unit card that comes with your figure. And I think that's a great idea. I like that from other systems like Confrontation and Alchemy. Now, there have been two new books come out, which you also might want to look at. There is Wrath for War Machine and Domination for Hordes. Now, this introduces a whole load of new stuff for all the factions. So if you want to be a completist, you're going to need the rule book, your faction book, and then either Wrath or Domination, depending on which game engine you get into. If you want to also see a little bit more, obviously go down to your local games club and game store, and hopefully someone there is involved. But if you can't do that, YouTube has a lot of really good coverage on War Machine these days. If you come across some weird bits where they're talking about 750 point battles and things like that, then that's the old Mark 1 rules. For Mark 2, as I say, they really scaled back the points things, and you know, it's very rare to spend more than 10 points on an individual figure unless it's one of these heavy special character figures that do exist. Anyway, I think that's enough waffling from me. So good luck to me for the tournament. And in the moment, I'm painting like a maniac, because whilst at the tournament I believe there isn't a stipulation you must have a painted load of figures, I think it's very poor form to turn up without painted figures in particular to a tournament. So I'm furiously painting them, and some of them I'm basically doing a very basic coat of paint, which I can always build up later if I run out of time before the weekend. Anyway, as I say, enough waffling from me. I will see you again sometime. So until then, good luck and happy gaming.